chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm excited to have Keith Mason on the show today. Keith is the Vice President at Miralex International, Associate Producer of Sound of Freedom and many other films, and the proud dad to 7 children ranging from 2 to 19. Well, Keith Mason, welcome to the Something Extra podcast today. I'm so delighted that you are making the time to be with me today on the show.
Honored. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you and I were connected by our mutual friend, Jim Bechtold. And I tell Jim this all the time. I'm going to say it again to the masses here, Keith. He's one of my favorite human beings on the planet. This guy is brilliant, but yet he's humble. He is the most encouraging person. I was just talking to him just a couple of days ago, and just the way he just speaks to people, it's like words of life. Right? Words of life. And so I was just so excited because he said he was totally blown away by your story and immediately reached out to me and said, Lisa, you need to know Keith. Yeah, you need to invite him onto the show. So, you know, I'm so delighted that he connected us. So Keith, I think your wife's name is Jessica. The thing that I find very interesting, though, is you guys have 7 children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big crew. It's a big crew. We have all the way from 19 down to 2 years old. And so we're a blended family. So at 5 children with my first wife, and we have 2 together. And they're 4 and 2 and wild. And my little daughter, Maria, has Down syndrome. And little Cruz is her big protector, even though he's younger. So.
Oh, I love that. Well, I know. So Jim told me, he said, Lisa, there's so many things that you and Keith are going to have in common, and one of them is you both have special girls. And so we're going to talk about that because I know little Maria has been a great teacher for you, as my Allie has for me. But, Keith, you're the founder of Personhood USA. We'll talk about that. You're the vice president of Miralex International. You're the producer of Sound of Freedom and other films that I want to talk about, an entrepreneur, businessman. And you just recently, I think, moved to Franklin, Tennessee, which is such a quaint, cute little town outside of Nashville. And I know you guys are going to enjoy living in that town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. We're looking forward to settling down. And it's kind of like Mayberry in a way over here. So I'm embracing that with how crazy the world is. You know, it's nice to have somewhere that's a little more normal and a little calmer. So
agreed. Yeah. I was just there in February, and I'd never been to Franklin before. I'd been to Nashville, but I'd never been to Franklin, and just the cutest, quaintest little town. And so I'm excited for you guys. But I know you have a really interesting story growing up, Keith. And so tell me about growing up, and then we'll get into what you're doing today more with Miralex. I want you to tell our listeners about that and what you're doing there. We'll talk about other things.
Okay. Well, I'm from Denver, Colorado originally. I can do a quick version. I grew up actually very poor. So I didn't have a lot, and my dad was a truck driver. And my mom was like a nurse, assistant nurse or something. But since we didn't have a lot of funds, I always was, very interested in ways I could make money as a kid and things like that. So I was very interested in like people that could create these businesses and do deals and things like that. So back then, we had a thing called the classifieds in a newspaper, like a paper newspaper. Remember those? And
Yes, I do.
you could look in the classifieds and people were selling cars. I also really like cars. And so when I was 15, I couldn't even drive, but I created a little business where I could buy cars for a cheaper amount and then sell them back on the classifieds. And so I ended up buying and selling cars when I was 15, 16, 17, and just, it became fun, and I lost some money, made some money, and it was a fun venture. But I grew up, I was homeschooled, and I gave my mom a real hard time. So she sent me out on the road with my dad as an over-the-road truck driver. So I think before I was 14, I visited most of the continental United States, just on the road, doing my schoolwork, learning how to work, and just listening to my dad, BS the other folks in the truck stops and whatever, So it was kind of,
Right.
that's how I grew up, And so,
Yeah.
so I've
Well,
kind
that
of got,
entrepreneurial bent. Yeah, you had that entrepreneurial bent at a very early age, though, right? And had that kind of industriousness, that you need to start businesses and risk, taking risk.
Yeah, I didn't know why I was led to that, but I was always fascinated by it, and I couldn't read enough books, and I would gravitate towards individuals that I would really look up to. I said, wow, they're doing very well. I want to learn what they know. And so I'd gravitate towards them and try to glean as much information as I could. And so I went from there to do real estate. And so I was young. I was when I was eight, just about 19, I moved to California, and I got involved in some real estate investment out there and doing some really dirty kind of work, like fixing up old, really dilapidated in a really rough area of town in California. And so I would go and fix it up and make some equity. And I got involved in doing some real estate then. So, and then that led me into doing, some of the folks I was doing that with were doing like pro-life ministry back at the time. And so we would do college campus ministry. We'd go out and talk about the issues of when life begins and just, apologetics in general on college campuses. And I was also kind of full of piss and vinegar, so I feel like I knew everything. So I'd go out and I'd love to debate people but it was all sort of interconnected about building something new and just this desire to just do better, because I came from nothing and I wanted to do better. I wanted to have more for my kids. I wanted to do more for just me as an individual. I knew that my dad had that capacity, but so I kind of was like, I was always evaluating him. You could have done better. You could have done better. And I was like, well, I'm going to do that for myself. And so I think that was a big driver for me in a lot of ways,
Yeah. Well, what I love about you, seriously, and we're going to talk about this, is like you did better, but not just for yourself. I mean, you've done a lot of good in the world, too, Keith. And so, though you got to have those funds, and we'll talk about that. Some of the movies that you produced, I mean, those things do not happen without people who have the funds to back them, So, yeah, doing better. Greg, when we were in high school, we met in church when we were 3 and 5. And when we were in high school, we dated all the way through high school, all the way through college. But in high school, we would talk. We both had an entrepreneurial bent, but we would talk about it. And he'd say, Lisa, if we could build a company one day and we can do really well as a company, we can do a lot of good in the world. And that truly has been the driver for us, even with our business today. And, the better that we can do, the more good we can do, right? So I love that about you. But, you had mentioned, the pro-life, and I know in 2008, you were involved in Finding Personhood USA. What drove you to do that? I mean, what is your, and obviously we don't want to get political on the podcast here, because everybody has their own beliefs, but what drove you and what are your beliefs around that?
Well, as I mentioned before, when I was in California doing some of the real estate stuff, I was doing college campuses, and so I had the opportunity to interact with hundreds, thousands of people. This is the marketplace of ideas. And so, from there, really the objective was to, in a conversation around life, around us as human beings, to get people to ask the question, what is it? And then that follow-up question is, who are we? Because more of that comes down to self-identity and value, where our value actually derives. And so if I were to boil down the motivation for personhood, it was to create a movement that had a marketing focus to get people to try to ask the question, what is it? But ultimately, who are we? And where does our value come from? So for me, even though I leveraged politics to gain attention, and in political sort of avenues, it was more about the fundamental question and letting people understand and teaching people about the principle of Imago Dei. So coming from the premise that all of, we are created in an image of God, and that's where our value derives from, letting people understand that, letting people think about that and have that as a concept. And so we took all this pro-life stuff, right? It's all the political stuff, and I came to the conclusion that it basically meant nothing. It's all subterfuge, it's all just noise, it's all just media stuff. But it boiled down, what the whole issue kind of boiled down to is, are humans persons or not? Do we have the rights of a person or not? And so we just created these simple ballot initiatives that people would sign and put things on the ballot to vote on that said all humans are persons. That's it. And boy, that was pretty controversial, just so you know. That was really a big deal because it was we pushed at people that advocated for something different to a place where they had to say, no, some humans are persons and some are not. And really that sounds ugly, and it is ugly. So when we start taking humans and saying, well, some humans are less than others based on certain factors, that's an ugly statement. And so that was where we sort of planted our tent pole, and we planted this flag and said, this is the line, and let's have a conversation, just like I did on co college campuses. Only we did a ballot initiative, which would change a constitution in a state, and we did this in other countries too, by the way. And because we did that, it created this massive conversation. And in the process of doing these ballot initiatives, we created a large volunteer base, which then would go back and mobilize churches and mobilize just communities. And it wasn't just people of faith that were doing this. It was, people that, we have agnostics and, even all kinds of different subgroups that would embrace this because it's a concept of just human dignity and basic, just basic decency in a sense. So, that's where that whole movement came from, and we expanded very quickly. I gained support of some large benefactors around the country, around the world. One of those was an individual that had an energy company, which I'm now working with now. And so it all sort of interconnects and things like that. But it was a great movement. But ultimately, we could track with empirical data that we changed the narrative in this country around life and what is this? Is it anti-choice? Is all these buzz phrases that really meant nothing? It became about what is a person? What is a person? And who are we? And what gives us value? And so that was the narrative that we're just so proud to be a part of that project. And there's a timeline for most things. There's a cycle for it. And so as we built that up, it had its time, and it built other things. And so one of our, several states we did campaigns in, there's many movements that created from that, and many people just had a different way of looking at this and a different way of thinking it. And I think, fundamentally we've seen a change in this country, but ultimately, hopefully we made a positive impact along the way, long term as well. So
Yeah, for sure. I just I'll read something that I wrote or read here that you'd written. every human being is a person and every person has a right to live, you know, is what you said. But I'm thinking about you because I want to get into so many other things. Your daughter, Maria, Sound of Freedom, and, you know, your work there. And then obviously I want to talk about Maralex and what you're trying to accomplish there, Keith. But I was just thinking about you yesterday and I was thinking, you know, all of these things that you're doing really kind of can be encapsulated in one theme, I think, and it's the power of human life. It's the power of human life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, you know, with that, I would love to move into, you know, what you did with Sound of Freedom. So Sound of Freedom, yeah, I want you to tell our listeners in case they haven't seen it, but I know in 2001, we have a really good friend, Zipper Zappa, here in St. Louis that owns Modern Media. I don't know if you know Zip or not. Amazing human being. You know Zip? Good. I love Zipper Zappa, but he had reached out to us about Sound of Freedom. And I know that there was a lot of, you know, hiccups and a lot of hard things, you know, to overcome. But, you know, why don't you, you know, this, we took our family and it released on July 4th, Independence Day. That significance was not lost on me. I'm like, what a beautiful day to release this film. But, you know, our whole family, we took our whole family and it was hard. It's hard content, right, Keith? But so important. And it was done in such an excellent way. So thank you for being involved. But, you know, yeah, why don't you tell us the journey of that? You know, tell us a little bit about the film. What's the premise of the film in case our listeners haven't seen it? I hope at the end of this podcast that if they haven't seen it, they will make sure that they do, because it really is excellent and it shines a light on a very difficult subject.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And it's truly my honor to be a part of that project. I've been a part of it a bit for 6 years, approximately. And there's all these interconnections. So the main producer of that film is a man named Eduardo Verástegui. And I've worked with him probably for the past 12 years. So he helped us fundamentally with personhood in a lot of ways, with a lot of international connections and a lot of just advocacy work. He's a great man and just a really just awesome individual. So he calls me and I call him hermano. We are brothers. So
love it.
And I'll mention his name is Mickey O'Hare. He's been a supporter of Eduardo. He's been a supporter of personhood. He's been now the head of this company, international company. So he was a lot of the backing behind the getting Sound of Freedom started. It was a journey. It was a very challenging journey. And even from the beginning, getting the funds in for this project were challenging. But a lot of really, if you do see the movie, a lot of big individuals are part of it. And let me back up because you asked me to talk about what it is. And so Sound of Freedom literally is the story of a man named Tim Ballard, who basically was a CIA Homeland Security agent. And his job was to find these children that were being trafficked and actually file charges and capture some of these pedophiles that were abusing these children and buying and selling them. And it's a very difficult thing to talk about, but it's a very dark thing, but there's an industry around buying and selling human beings for exploiting them for sexual purposes and other things as well. It's a very ugly thing to talk about. It's not a polite thing mm-hmm. to talk about, but it's happening all the time and it's happening in a growing rate. And so Tim Ballard essentially went on a mission to find these two children. There's two children he was looking for. And through that process, he had to go outside of the agency and actually had to resign from the agency to go find these children and risk essentially everything. And so I've known Tim for, you know, maybe 13, 14 years, and I've known of his work, and I've been even invited to join on some of the stings and things like that. But he's just an amazing individual, and his wife is equally and even more amazing than him, and a lot of the reason that he was able to do that. But in the story, it shows how Catherine really supported him to go and risk it all. And they have
Yeah.
they have a whole bundle of kids
They
too.
have a whole lot of kids,
Yeah,
right? They
exactly.
have their own children.
Yeah. So, but she just her faith just drove her to push him to help rescue these children. And through this effort of him resigning from the agency, he created an organization called Operation Underground Railroad, and started a movement around rescuing these kids and putting these perpetrators behind bars. And so this is the story of one of the first rescues that basically led him from resigning. I'll give your audience a small preview. Sound of Freedom 2 has already been written, and there was another rescue that was happening almost simultaneously to the one in Cartagena, and it was in Haiti. And so the next film will be kind of discussing that a little bit. But just an amazing story. It is intense. It deals with very difficult matter, but I would allow, if you haven't seen it, we did our best, and Alejandro Monteverde, I think, did a masterful job of showcasing something that's very difficult, but with good taste, and not going too far with what we're showing the audience, and making a very, very difficult subject relatable and able to see and sit through, and not see very, very graphic things or go too far with it. So it's an intense film, but it's worth watching, and everyone should watch it. And they won't go too far, I promise. So,
Right. Yeah. It was done with excellence. Jim Caviezel plays Tim Ballard, Jim Caviezel played Jesus in The Passion. I remember that scene, Keith, about you talking about Catherine, because she said, "They're my children now." She felt like that little girl and boy were her children too. So it was just so incredible. But there was a lot of difficulty, right, in making that film. Lots of difficulty, lots of pushback. People saying, "Oh, people are not going to go see this film. It's too hard." But here's what I say: the truth. We need to shed light on the truth. Right. And it's truth. It's happening. You've said, I mean, people may want to turn their head and think that it's not happening, but it is. And it's an atrocity that really needs to be stopped.
And it's funny you mentioned Zip. So we got involved. So 20th Century Fox was actually a very strategic partner, very supportive. They came in and actually funded part of the equity to make the project happen. And so they were equity partners, and then they had committed to doing sort of the promotional and advertising budget as well, which is $20 million about. So we went through this process, and everything was on track. The film was in the can. Everything started to move forward, and then basically 20th Century started to be less responsive and kind of like, well, we need to start looking at getting this thing out there. And they just kind of went dark on us for a while, and then they came back to the table and said, actually, we're being acquired, and we set this asset aside so that you could buy us out of it, and you have a short period of time to do so. Otherwise, this is going to be an asset of Disney, essentially, and we believe that they're going to table it. And so they basically gave us that opportunity. And so that's how I went from just being a supporter and cheerleader of the project to being an active associate producer of the project, where I had to go and enlist the support of a lot of friends. Zip is one of them. Hero. And so he we so we organized screenings across the country to see if people wanted to join, invest in the project, and try to raise the funds that we needed to buy back, essentially, and have full ownership of the project. So this is years ago. This is COVID, right before COVID hit. And we were successful of bringing those dollars to the table and buying it back, and making it ours. And right as that happened, theater started shutting down. Literally, we had a date to go theatrical on it, and that's right when theaters were starting to shut down. So we pulled the project back. And so when I say this is about a 6-year endeavor, it's literally all these different, winding curves and just and twists and barriers and things like that. But just, persistence, tenacity, pushing through. And I remember, and if Zip watches this, he has a very influential friend, And we were trying to screen it for this friend, and he basically came back and gave us the feedback. Well, who's going to want to watch a movie about sex trafficking? No one would want to see that. And when I and last month when I was looking at the box office as the number one independent film of the year, I was like, maybe somebody do. Some people do. I
Maybe
don't
somebody.
know.
Yeah, because yeah.
And so I just and it's it, I get the point. You know, you know, logically, a lot of the things that we did with this didn't make sense. Bringing Angel Studios on as a partner and a distribution partner, we needed them, but frankly, I was nervous. You know, I was nervous. I love the people that are involved in that. They're brilliant marketing minds, but it was hard for me to see through like all the ways that that could work. But it really took them and their boldness. And they said, you know, we're going to do this. They chose July 4th, Independence Day. And they said, we're going to do this and we're going to go up against Indiana Jones. And we just believe it's going to work. And you know, it's funny. It
And it
worked.
did.
Yeah.
It did.
It did.
I don't know the numbers, but I remember Greg and I were following it, you know, and Indiana Jones. I don't know what they brought in, but I mean now, and I don't even know if this is accurate, but I did just kind of look to see, I mean, in the box office with the international distribution in US, I mean, close to $200 million in revenue.
And it was over 180 domestic, and it just went international last weekend. So we'll see that number grow, certainly. And what's funny is you see some of the reports and how that happened essentially. And only so many people go to the theaters, you know, every week or whatever. And so usually it's the big studios that take about 90% of all those resources and revenues and things like that. But there's a report that came out that basically said Indiana Jones is missing about $100 million in revenue. Mission Impossible is missing about $100 million in revenue. So I think what we did is we brought it into this film that focuses on just an amazing cause that everybody should be aware of. And you know, we're ultimately so grateful and just humbled by the whole thing.
Yes. Well, I'm so grateful too. I'm grateful that you guys, you know, stayed the course. You were persistent, you know, and getting it out there and overcoming the challenges. So, you know, let me ask you one more question, and we need to take a quick break. But, you know, since the film's release, Keith, have you guys had any stories of other people feeling, you know, empowered now to go get involved? I mean, do you guys have any of that data or anything that has resulted from the more awareness from the film? It's
Well,
hard to measure, probably.
I would say millions have gotten involved in an initial level to be raise awareness of this, and they feel empowered to take this on as a cause and to be watchful and to look. And so, I could. There's a lot of stories that I've heard just through the grapevine, but I couldn't bring one specifically that says this is the one that you need to hear about. But I can tell you that. Because of that awareness, there's a lot more people watching for this who were just completely unaware. And because of that, children will absolutely be saved because there's an awareness drawn about the whole thing. And I would say there's another movement that I can't really talk about just yet, but like there's another movement that's developing that'll be even more impactful, you know, and that will push this out and expose even more of the folks that are sort of involved in this kind of underbelly. And it's exciting to know that it's and it'll result in children being, you know, not only saved but rehabilitated. And there's aspects of that I'd love to share with you too about some of their efforts. Like Catherine is a hero. She's a superhero. She runs an organization that helps place these kids up for adoption, you know, that are rescued out of this. And we worked with her at a superficial level with the Jerome Lejeune Foundation to try to find homes for children with special needs. And there's so many different aspects of how we've all kind of come together and worked for the greater good of humanity. And ultimately, just to your point before, the continuity of these things, the reason it's wrong to traffic a child is because they're not property, they're a person. They're not a thing to be bought or sold. So just to bring that home
Human
for you.
life.
Yeah.
Human life. I love it. Well, we've got so much more to talk about, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Keith Mason on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my new friend, Keith Mason. So, Keith, I have loved everything we've talked about so far. I have to ask you, though, I know you've had other films that you produced, and I did not know that until today. But, you know, I was going to ask you, what other films do you have? You have other films in the making? Where are you headed with this filmmaking?
Well, yeah, there's many that have been presented. I'm a part of a organization called RCM3. We have potentially 100 films or more to be in co-producing and be in partnership with. Some of the projects, some of the bigger projects that are in front of us are a film called Nuremberg. It's starring Russell Crowe, and it's the backstory of the drama that was surrounding actually holding the Nuremberg trials or not. And I was at a restaurant just a month ago and talking about the project, and the waitress was like, "What is Nuremberg? What happened? I'm not sure if I'm aware." And so even just this lack of awareness of what happened with the Nuremberg trials and why that was important, and how we devalued humanity, and what the World War was about, you know, it's just, there's such an ignorance about it. So I'm very looking forward to that project. And you know, as you know, there's a strike. And so this is the only project that I'm a part of right now that has gotten a SAG waiver to actually shoot later this fall. And so, okay. So that's a really important project. We have other projects that I'm, you know, just in the background and just helping along around maybe the story of Milton Hershey. And he, you know, what's really amazing about him as an entrepreneur and just everything he's doing is he was an entrepreneur. He built this amazing business, but he didn't make chocolate candy bars so that people could enjoy chocolate candy bars. He made Hershey bars to support the orphans, you know, and people don't know that.
I did not know that.
You know, he had a mission, you know, for everything he did. And so what's really neat about that story is also his wife, who took over the company, and in the early 1900s, that was very uncommon, but she created that into a multi-billion dollar empire. Not him. She did it. So there's really cool aspects about that. There's a bunch more. There's a film about a man named Russ Hobbs. He was in Dallas, Texas. He created these nightclubs in Deep Ellum, Dallas, that a lot of bands got their start in. And then he had this conversion moment because his janitor led him to his home church. And the headlines at the time were, you know, Russ Hobbs pours out the alcohol in Profit Bar and things like that. So a lot of really interesting stories are presenting. So we'll see the path. There's a lot of challenges in the entertainment industry in front of us.
Yes. But
usually the projects that I'm drawn to have some sort of meaningful impact, you know, on people's lives or culture. You know, that's what I get most excited about being a part of or helping with either the financing or building the business structure around those projects.
So yeah, Keith, I love that you are involved in these things. The power of a story, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, people will remember a story. They're not going to remember a lot of statistics, but I guarantee you they're going to remember a story. And so putting good, inspirational, truthful, you know, stories that are going to impact people, impact their thinking, their way of thinking in a better way, I think is really powerful. And, you know, I think about our children. Coming up, they need to hear these stories. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to hear these stories as much as we do. I did not know that about Hershey. I knew a little bit about Hershey, you know, Hershey, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, and, you know, but I did not know that the whole reason he was doing that was to, you know, help orphans. I had no idea, But those are the kind of stories I think that need to be told. Well, I want to move in now to your precious little 4-year-old daughter, Maria, your little girl with the extra 21st chromosome. What has having Maria, well, tell me the backstory of Maria for one thing, but then, you know, what I'd really love for you to say, you know, Keith, is tell our listeners how Maria has changed you and what you have learned from her, because I say this all the time. Allie literally has been one of my greatest teachers. She teaches me something new every single day about just what it means to be a human, a decent human being, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. I don't know that we have enough time on your show for me to go really into how much she's taught me, but I would, and it wouldn't be an exaggeration for me to say that she's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me, you know, and the greatest, you know, individual I've been in contact with. She happens to be my daughter. You know, I've always, you know, obviously I've been pro-life. And so I've always supported, you know, you people with special needs. And I just thought of it, you know, I was like, yeah, that's great. You know, that's a good thing. But it hit home. So, you know, my first marriage, you know, ended and sadly, and so I was, you know, kind of wandering in the wilderness, so to speak. And I met this beautiful woman from Tennessee, and she comes from a, you know, Christian background, and her uncle started Thomas Nelson, the Bible publishing company. So big Christian family. Exactly. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So just, you know, her father and her uncle and all of her uncles, you know, immigrated from Beirut. So they're all Lebanese living in, you know, Nashville, essentially. And so they built this amazing Bible publishing. I think it was one of the biggest, or was one of the biggest in the world or something. So really amazing. So, we fell in love like pretty quickly, you know, and she was living in New York City. And I was traveling all over I had a coffee company at the time, because I do startups too. And so I had a coffee company in Santa Cruz, and she was in New York. And so we started hanging out, fell in love. And then I was invited onto a film called Unplanned. And so, okay, great. So just got involved with that one. We you know, brought the dollars in for that independent film. And it's an interesting story. It's not as good as Sound of Freedom, just so everybody in the audience knows if they want to see a movie, see Sound of Freedom. But during that journey, we got pregnant with Maria, and it was very unplanned. And pretty, it was okay, you know, it's great. We have a kid now, it's great. We're moving right along and everything. And it was 13 weeks we got the diagnosis that she had a heart defect. And they basically identified the increased nuchal fold in the back of her neck. And Jessica had never been pregnant. And, you know, so she's pretty freaked out by the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it was stunning how just absolute and just the physicians and doctors just assumed that, you know, we wouldn't go through with this pregnancy, that we would, you know, snuff out this little girl's life. And they didn't really know who they're dealing with, I think, but like, I was just like, that's not even an option. Like, that's not like in my vocabulary. And so we had a journey, and it was very tough to be in that environment. And actually Maria was the first child born in that whole OB practice that had gone on for 25 years. She was the first child with Down syndrome knowingly born. One other was born, but they didn't know he had Down syndrome. And so it gives you an idea of how many thousands of babies that were born and that, you know, that were never even considered having an option at life. And so, you know, there's so many things to talk about with Maria, but just learning that initial process was, you know, I was talking to my spiritual director, and it was really challenging. He goes, well, you know, you could leave. You could not stick with this. It's challenging, but you could also just love her through it, you know, speaking of my wife and the challenges, and it was just, oh, you know, doesn't really give me an option, but it was amazing, and it was right. And that was the theme of that film, Unplanned, was that, you know, Doug in that movie was Abby's husband, and he had to love her through this process where she was converting her whole life and her whole, you know, mission in life to do something that's better and good and true and beautiful. And so I remember it was an interesting time. We spent 6 weeks in the NICU. It was a battle. She's had open heart surgery. There's been all these things. But during one of the screenings of Sound of Freedom, we had we did one in Denver, and we had Jim Caviezel come out. And I don't know if he was, you know, doing a role or whatever, but he looked like a homeless person, and he had long hair. He looked really ragged, and we were having a steak at Ted's Montana Grill. I'll never forget it. And he learned the story, and he looked at me like all intense, like he gets, and he goes, "That little girl is going to drag some of her siblings to heaven."
Mm. Wow. Okay. I'm crying now. Wow. Amazing.
So the cool part of that is that, you know, my oldest is, she's 19 now, but she's extremely close to Maria. And she's mm-hmm. actually going to medical school to do physical therapy for kids like her. So I happen yes. to have tissues here. I wasn't planning this, I promise.
Yeah.
So, but she went through a real challenging time as a teenager. I think it happens, right? And
yes.
My wife was snooping. And it was I want to be clear, it's my wife that was snooping, not me, because I would never do this.
Right.
And she ended up looking at her diary
yes.
that was left open and some of her writings. And, you know, it was right there that, you know, Emma was writing about how Maria helped restore her faith.
Wow.
All right. I didn't expect to get emotional. Sorry. I have this on camera now. But yeah, but so Maria, I mean, there's not much better you could get, I think. And Maria just continues to, when she enters a room, you know, she's she changes it. I watch her change Amen. People's lives on a daily basis. And this isn't mm-hmm. necessarily unique to her. This is the gift. Mm-hmm. This is the gift. Mm-hmm. And so you know, mm-hmm. Jerome, I was invited to join the Jerome Lejeune Foundation mm-hmm. while she was in the NICU, actually. And so the first call I made was to Brandy Cook. She's the vice president for the Tim Tebow Foundation. And so I immediately employed Tim's help to try to get involved and to do some things. And it was right before her heart surgery. I remember we were on a plane to Paris, and Tim had just married Demi, and so they had just yeah. finished their honeymoon, and then they were going to meet us in Paris. And so at the Jerome Lejeune Foundation in Paris. And so he was the individual who, he's known as the father of modern genetics, and he actually mapped out the human genome before like computers and a lot of modern technology. And he was the one who identified it was the third 21st chromosome that was the thing that would causing Down syndrome, essentially. And so he developed technologies that were later used to destroy these individuals, like the amniocentesis and things like that. They were used as a tool to hurt rather than help. And so he basically devoted his life to care for what he calls his brothers. And his writings are prolific about understanding the most beginning moments of human life, the communication between that very, you know, very new life, and in some of the best technologies that have been created to actually care for individuals with Down syndrome are coming out of Paris. And so we joined that. We had Tim, you know, come out and just do like Night to Shine events and things like that in Paris. Mm-hmm. And little Maria, you know, I think back to some of Jerome's writings, you know, and he basically said, you know, the creator used DNA as sort of the code. He's writing out the humans, essentially. And if you say with people with Down syndrome, with the additional chromosome, I'm trying to think of the exact quote, but it's something to the effect of, and it goes back to the name of your show, individuals with Down syndrome are not missing anything. They simply have something extra. And we think of it as a comma.
Mm-hmm.
We think of it as a comma in a sentence because God's trying to tell us something additional.
Oh.
And he uses these people to do that. And
yeah.
Mother Teresa actually has one of my favorite quotes about people with Down syndrome. And she calls little girls like your daughter and mine the professors of love.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So
that's beautiful.
Anyway.
All right, Cam. We could do a whole podcast on this, couldn't we? We could, we should. Yeah. We could and we should. The love is the unconditional love. The only time Allie may get a little upset is if she really loves Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if I don't have time to go get her Starbucks and she really wants one, she could get disappointed. But, you know, it doesn't mean that they're perfect. But I'm telling you, I could tell you story after story after story of how Allie has shown up. And Jenny would tell you this too. I have people in our office that'll say, "Can Allie just come by? I really need an Allie hug." You know? And so I don't know, Keith. We could talk for a long time. But we're running out of time here. This has been so much fun. I've absolutely loved our time together. But I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about Marlex International. And then I'll ask you about the something extra every leader needs, and that will be our show for today. But I know you're the vice president of Marlex International. What are you guys? And you've already mentioned Mickey's name, but what are you guys trying to accomplish with Marlex?
So Marlex International, Mickey O'Hare is the founder of it, and a few years ago he bought his partners out and wanted to take it in a different direction than it had been in the past. This company actually was involved in drilling the first coal bed methane wells in the continent of Africa. They did a lot of work internationally over the years. It's almost 40 years old, so it's been around for quite a while. So a few years ago he asked me to get involved and to helped set up the building blocks for basically building out an integrated energy company, which means from the drill bit into the ground to the terminal head on the water. We're building out all the operations from that. And then we're actually looking to supply fuels to Eastern and Central Europe. And this sort of concept came to him because he understood that there's limitations on the European policies for bringing in fuels like natural gas that work, and abandoning those for other fuels that are more temperamental and less reliable. And so there's this gap that's developing. And then the conflict with Russia happened, and it became extremely important and very needed. Mm-hmm. So it's been working. So we have a list of customers that are looking to purchase. We have properties that are being developed in energy-friendly states in America. And so the pieces are all sort of lining up, but it comes from the principle and the understanding that there's two things that society needs, that humans need to thrive. It's food and energy. And so from mm-hmm. those two things, you can build everything, you know, and have a society where people can thrive and live well and do well and be healthy. And so from those two elements, we're building up this company.
You're handling one of the challenges.
So, right. Yeah. Well, and with this, our big picture is to build greenhouses on these properties that they're producing energy and using, because people don't talk about this, but carbon seems like the enemy. But plants need carbon to grow, and we develop carbon out of these energy fields and funnel it into greenhouses. Well, these vegetables and things, plants can grow and be nutritious and it's a big system that we're building, and it's a big, big vision.
Yeah.
But it seems to be working well. We have amazing European partners. We're targeting countries that are friendly and that embrace these ideas as well. And I'll actually be heading over this weekend to attend some conferences and to reconnect with some of our buyers. And so it's a big, big project, but it's going very well. And we'll see where we end up, but I think it's fun as well. So,
I'm thinking about you. I'm thinking everything that you do, Keith, really is very purposeful and very intentional, and it all kind of comes back to life, right? I don't know. I think that's kind of your thing, but I love it. Everything that you've said today, and it's just been so much fun. But I have to ask you, because this is, you know, the common theme through every Something Extra podcast is, what do you believe, Keith, is the something extra that every leader needs?
To learn how to love more.
Amen to that. I so agree with you. You're talking my language. That was my one word for 21, was love more. I know it was two words, but my friend Bill Ellis said, it's okay, Lisa, just put a hyphen in there.
Let's go with it.
Yeah. So to learn to love more. Wow. That is so good. You know, loving our colleagues, our teams, our families, our world, right? Our community. So yeah, we could spend our whole lifetime just working on that right there. So thank you so much, Keith. This has been such a delight for me, truly. I know how busy you are. So thank you so much for making the time.
My honor and joy. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.